भगवते वसुदेवाय. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 47, The Song of the Bee, Text number 53. Sri Sukruvacha Tatastha Krishna Sandeshe Vyapita Viraha Jara Uravam Bhujiyam Chakru Yatvatmanam Adhoksajam Sri Sukru Vacha Tatastha Krishna Sandeshe Vyapita Viraha Jara Uravan Bhujiyam Chakru Yatvatmanam Adhoksajam Sri Sukruvacha Tatastha Krishna Sandeshe Vyapita Viraha Chara Uravan Pujiyam Chakru Yatvatmanam Adhoksajam. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Tataha, then, Taha, they, Krishna Sandeshai, by the messages from Krishna, Vyapita, removed, Viraha, of their separation, Jvara, the fever, Uravam, Udava, Pujiyam, Chakru, worshipped, Gyatva, recognizing him, Atmanam, himself, Adhoksajam, as the Supreme Lord. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Krishna's messages, having relieved their fever of separation, the gopis then worshipped Uddhava, recognizing him as non-different from their Lord, Krishna. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami states that the words Gyatvatmanam Adhoksajam also indicate that the gopis recognize Lord Krishna to be the very soul of their lives and thus spiritually one with them. I read the next verse too. Uvasa kadachin masan gopinam vinudhansucha Krishna lila katam gaiham ramayam asagokulam. Uddhava remained there for several months, dispelling the gopi's sorrow by chanting the topics of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Thus he brought joy to all the people of Gokul. Purport. The great Acharya Jiva Goswami comments in this regard that Uddhava, during his stay in Vrindavan, certainly took special care to enliven Krishna's foster parents, Nanda and Yashoda. So that here Sukadeva Goswami is continuing to speak. We just finished the section where the gopis have been speaking with Uddhava, and later on Uddhava will speak something a little more on the glorification of the gopis. So just to put a backdrop to these couple of verses, we could recap what we've heard so far. Who's been following the story? Where did it all begin? Who knows? What was the beginning of this chapter? Uddhava? What's that?
Uddhava had arrived
Uddhava had arrived, that's right. Uddhava arrived in Vrindavan, and he was quickly noticed by the gopis who surrounded Uddhava and took him to a quiet and secluded place so they could question him. And the gopis, they immediately began to sing all about the glories of Krishna, and they were crying in separation without any embarrassment or without any shame. They were just Uddhava was quite amazed by this scene, and so they began to immediately glorify Krishna. And then what happened?
The gopis walked away. Started talking to a bee.
Who was that?
Radharani.
Yeah. So Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani was imagining that what Krishna must be doing with all the women of Mathura, you know, enjoying himself in their company. And as she began to imagine these dealings between Krishna and the women of Mathura, a jealous anger known as mana began to arise within her heart. And so she saw a honeybee, and she imagined that Krishna had sent that honeybee as a messenger in order to pacify her because of his associating with the women of Mathura. So Srimati Radharani began to speak to that messenger, that honeybee, in a state of what's called divyanmada, or divine madness. And that's Srila Rupa Goswami in the Nectar Devotion, he describes that state of divyanmada, or divine madness, has 10 different stages. And each of those stages is expressed through a particular type of mad talk called Chitra Jalpa, speaking impulsively in the mood of love with some covered anger. So there are 10 different types of Chitra Jalpa which were described, which are reflect each of these different 10 stages of divine madness called Divyanmada. And so Srimati Radharani, she was experiencing this, it's also called Mohana, or bewilderment. And that Mohana, bewilderment, when it actually reaches a very high, its topmost peak, it becomes Divyanmada. And it is described that that is the most excellent part of Mahabhava, of who Srimati Radharani is the personification. Mahabhava, of course, being the topmost excellent stage of love of God, Krishna Prema. So in 12 verses, or 10 verses, from verse 12 to verse 10 or 11 verses there, they describe those different talks with by Srimati Radharani. And after witnessing this topmost manifestation of love by the gopis, then Uddhava thought that he would then give them the message that Krishna had sent. That was the purpose, of course, that Krishna had sent him. And so he began to pacify the gopis, who were in such a state of love of God that they were you know, verging on divine madness. So he thought he'd better. They were, you know, Krishna was concerned, and Uddhava also could see that if they weren't pacified, you know, they would probably want to give up their lives, you know, like that. They were, you know, feeling great despair. Their separation from Krishna was causing them great despair. Of course, as we know, that great despair on the transcendental platform is transcendental ecstasy. So Uddhava, in pacifying the gopis, he first began to praise the gopis. And he told the gopis that their love for Krishna, their absorption, the way their mind was absorbed in Krishna, was universally worshipped. That he described that before the appearance of the gopis, there had never been such a manifestation of love of God. That there, the love of God displayed by the gopis was the topmost excellent platform. They were so absorbed in such intense meditation on the Supreme Lord. So Uddhava, he thanked them and considered it that it was their great mercy that they had actually manifested that and revealed that to him. And of course, this is the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, that the topmost goal of life is love of God, Krishna Prema, and the topmost manifestation of that, of love of God, is exhibited by the gopis. So this is, therefore we follow Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are many other manifestations of love of God on this planet, but there is nothing that can compare with the gopis. Comparatively speaking, if we look at all the various religions of the world, because devotees never criticize other religions, but they certainly will point out when something is going in the name of religion that is actually against the principles of religion. For instance, if someone is teaching that God has no form, then that is irreligious. That is an irreligious principle. That's against the principles of religion. So if someone is preaching that, then a devotee will point that out quite strongly. Devotees never criticize religion, because there are many different stepping stones in love of God, beginning from the very beginning stages, very, you know, just a faint recognition that, you know, maybe God is there, and there's some, you know, sentiment which is very much mixed with all sorts of material concepts and what have you, but there's something there. You know, and there are some moral principles which help, you know, secondary principles. They're not eternal religious principles, as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes this, they're secondary, namitika, which means that they're religious principles that you perform in this world, but if you actually went to the spiritual world, you wouldn't be doing them. Whereas Srimad Bhagavatam teaches nityadham, or religious principles, where if you actually went to the spiritual world, you'd still be doing those same activities. So there are, but still, there are many stepping stones on the path to love of God, and devotees never criticize them, because they understand that they're all helping people to gradually move to the perfectional stage of love of God. But if you compare, if you look at all the different religious principles comparatively, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did, as you see when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu travelled through India, he spoke with everyone from all different religions, all different philosophies, and he discussed with them comparatively that, you know, these are the good points. Lord Chaitanya always found the excellences with any sampradaya, any religion. He always found their good points. But he also pointed out that, you know, where their shortfall was. In other words, where they finished off, he would then describe to them that there is another stage that you could expand to, like that. So that's the way that Lord Chaitanya would preach. Not in a critical way, but in a comparative way, in helping people to advance in their love of God. So if we compare all the different religions and all the different manifestations of love of God on this planet, there is none which compares with the pure love of that of the gopis. So that is what, therefore we follow Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, the Vaishnavas, they can make a comparative study, an analysis of all the different religions, because if you understand the highest, you can understand everything that comes before that. But of course, someone on the very beginning stages of religious sentiments, they cannot actually make a proper comparative study of religion, because they only know up to a certain level. How can they compare that with something they cannot understand, which is way beyond? And sometimes that's what happens. So if someone is very, very elevated in understanding, you know, love of God from its beginning to its very end, they can make a comparative understanding properly in a non-critical way and help everyone to advance further. But if someone is actually on a, you know, the beginning stages or even the middle stages, they actually cannot make a proper comparative study because they're speaking beyond the realms of their realization. So you know, this is Uddhava was describing to the gopis. He was praising them that, you know, your appearance in this world, you have manifested a standard of love of God which is unexcelled. And that is also the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then Uddhava began to give the gopis the message that was given by Krishna, and he said to them that Krishna speaking through Uddhava, that he actually, the gopis, Krishna was never really separated from them. And because they were always so absorbed in thinking of Krishna, that Krishna would very quickly become present before them. That was Krishna's message. And that the only reason that Krishna appeared to be absent from them was that he was hoping and successfully trying to draw them closer. By being separated from them, he was actually trying to draw them closer. They say absence makes the heart grow fonder. So actually, Krishna explained through Uddhava in many philosophical terms how Krishna was actually always present, because on the spiritual platform there is no impediment. There's never any, not by time nor space nor by any material impediment can hamper spiritual association. So Krishna can be present by his will at any time. And simultaneously, he can, even if he's absent, he can still be present. Materially, you cannot do that. But spiritually, even if Krishna is absent, he can still be present fully. He can be more present. This is the wonder of Krishna. This is the nature of God. So, he explained that. So, the gopis, of course, they were very happy to hear Uddhava's message, but still, you know, then they began to question Uddhava. So when is Krishna coming? And, you know, what is he doing in Mathura? When he speaks with the women of Mathura, does he mention us? Does he speak about us? Does he tell them about our rasa dance and all our different, you know, pastimes? they began to speak with Uddhava like that. And then gradually they becoming absorbed in Krishna again. They admitted to Krishna, to Uddhava, that they felt somewhat hopeless that Krishna would ever return, and that they felt like, you know, they were wondering how they could go on with their lives. And they, you know, called out to Govinda, you know, please come and save us. Save all of Gokul. So that is where we finished the previous text, which brings us to today's text, where Sukadeva Goswami is saying that Lord Krishna's messengers, having relieved their fever of separation, the gopis then worshipped Uddhava, recognizing him as non-different from their Lord Krishna. And in the next verse, Uddhava remained there for several months, dispelling the gopis' sorrow by chanting the topics of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Thus he brought joy to all the people of Gokul. So that sets the the stage for these verses. Just a recap of this chapter. So Uddhava, seeing that the gopis were again still feeling somewhat hopeless and feeling, you know, what is the use of going on living, Uddhava actually gave them more confidential messages from Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that, although it's not mentioned here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we can understand that Uddhava gave them more confidential messages by the result that the gopis, he managed to relieve their fever of separation. So Uddhava said to the gopis that Krishna said to them that they are more dear to him than his very life, and that if they gave up their life, then he would give up his life as well. And Uddhava said to them, you close your eyes. And so they all closed their eyes. And as soon as they closed their eyes, then by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, Krishna compressed millions and millions of years within one moment of time. And within that one moment, Krishna appeared before the gopis and again manifested the Rasa Leela dance. And they had the playing of dice and the swing festival and water pastimes and so many wonderful pastimes for millions and millions of years, all compressed within one moment. And then when Uddhava saw that all their bodies were erupting with ecstasy, and within a moment he said, now open your eyes. And when they opened their eyes, then they felt completely relieved of all the pangs of separation. They felt like they'd been reborn and were, you know, just bounding with transcendental bliss. So Then they worshipped Uddhava, because as it describes here, that they worship Uddhava, recognizing him as non-different from their Lord Krishna. Krishna is very mysterious in the way he appears. It's actually said by some acharyas that that bee that Radharani saw was actually Krishna. Here, the gopis are worshipping Uddhava as non-different from Krishna, but it is not in a monistic sense, or Mayavadi sense. They are understanding that Uddhava is able to, manifest Krishna before them. When Uddhava said, "You close your eyes," and they close their eyes, and by his instructions, Krishna immediately manifested. And so they are worshipping just in the same way we sing the prayers daily, Shakshad Daritve Samasta Sastu Tastata Bhavyatariva Sadhya Kintu Prabhu Yapriya Vitasha Vande Guroshi Charanaravindam, which is a very beautiful prayers by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which describe that we worship the spiritual master as being non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he is the most confidential servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not that he is God, but because he is such a confidential servitor of God that he can actually give you Krishna. And just as when Uddhava spoke those messages to the gopis actually felt the presence of Krishna. And that is the spiritual master also has that potency. But when the spiritual master speaks the message of Krishna, then one is able to feel the presence of Krishna. Therefore, he is worshipped as non-different. What to speak of the spiritual master? Actually, Srila Prabhupada describes that one who has the association of the Vaishnavas, the devotees, such a person is already associating with Krishna. What to speak of the spiritual master? Krishna acts through the Vaishnavas, and particularly the spiritual master is very, very confidential Vaishnava, servant of the Supreme Lord. And the message is just like Srila Prabhupada, he brought to us the message of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, as it is. And Srila Prabhupada used to say that, before he came to the West, there were, hundreds of versions of the Bhagavad Gita, and there were, different swamis and who had actually come to the Western world, but none of them were actually able to make one single devotee, as Srila Prabhupada said. So many Bhagavad Gitas, so many swamis, even coming to the Western world preaching, but not one of them, none of them could make even one devotee. But when Srila Prabhupada brought Bhagavad Gita as it is, then we see devotees manifesting all over the world. Why? Because Krishna was present. In the same way that when Uddhava spoke, Krishna was present, the gopis were able to feel his, through that message, Krishna's presence. And when the spiritual master speaks, one can feel that Krishna is present. And therefore the gopis thank Uddhava. And, in that way they worshipped him. They worshipped him and they praised him that had you not come here and given us this message of Krishna, we would have surely died. And not only have you saved us, and given us, this association of Krishna, but you have also fulfilled our desire because we wanted to protect all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan because they're also suffering like us. But we could not protect them because we could not even save ourselves. But you have saved us and you have given us the ability to protect others. So in a similar way, Srila Prabhupada, acting as the representative of Lord Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also saved us from a hopeless situation, practically. Sometimes it's easy to forget as devotees, because every day we have such nice association, we have such nice prasadam, beautiful temple, like that. Especially in a place like this in Melbourne, very, very wonderful. But this world is a terrible, terrible world. It's a horrible place. And sometimes we reflect back, you know, why we become devotees is because there is just such pain and sorrow and hopelessness in this world. You know, if you look around the material world, there's just wars everywhere. You know, at any stage in the whole history of this world, you know, some people say, when is the next world war? But, you know, there's just constant wars. They're always, you know, right now, you know, right this very second, we cannot imagine, you know, people are just being killed en masse right at the very second. People are being tortured. Innocent, children are being, orphaned. And, people, mothers are trying to feed children with, barely able to feed themselves. There's so much starvation, throughout the world, so much hunger. There's so much suffering in this world. It is because in the Western world, people just like to, as long as their lawn is nicely mowed, then everything is okay. my lawn's nicely mowed. I have the latest toaster, car's running well, everything's okay. It's a wonderful place. Gonna have a barbecue next Sunday. But people don't actually stop and think. Just the majority of people, even in a country like Australia, still so many people are suffering. The indigenous people and people who come from, other countries to this, country are often, subject daily to racism and, there's so much difficulty, so much trouble. And, Srila Prabhupada giving us Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, he saved us from that, very, very hopeless, terrible situation. So, and not only that, but in a similar way, he also gave us then the ability to protect others, which is really our duty. I remember when I first got the Bhagavad Gita, and I was actually at a party, and I was quite intoxicated, all sorts of various things, and. But I was suffering. I was disgusted with myself. I was disgusted with everyone at the party. I was disgusted with this whole planet. I was sitting there, I was thinking, I'm intoxicated. I've got everything you could want. It's all here at this party and I can't enjoy any of it. In fact, it's making me miserable. That's what I was thinking. And so I thought, I'm just going to sit in the corner and I'm just going to find a book and read a book and show everyone I'm disgusted with their parties. And so I reached into the shelf which was next to me and I pulled out the biggest book I could find. And the biggest book I could find was a Bhagavad Gita. So I pulled out the Bhagavad Gita And in my intoxicated state, I started to read the preface. And I thought, gee, this is deep, you know. No, but I'd actually read philosophy. I'd read a few impersonalist philosophy books before I'd read the Bhagavad Gita. So as soon as I saw it, even while I was drunk and everything else, I could still understand that this was the best, most, you know, as soon as I started reading it, I thought there is no philosophy better than this. This is it. And I just saw it like that. And the lady who was actually running the party, she was an ex-girlfriend. And I said, can I have that book? Can I have that Bhagavad Gita? And she said, yes. We'd actually broken up. She said, you give me a diary and I'll give you that book. I said, yeah, that's great. So I gave him my diary. Have it. All bad memories. I never used to write anything bad about anyone anyway. So I gave him my diary. I got the Bhagavad Gita and I was rad. So then I started reading it at work, and then a friend of mine, he just bought a new car, and he wanted to drive to West Australia from Melbourne and try out his new car. So he said, you want to come? And I thought, great, I could read the Bhagavad Gita all the way. So I quit my job, grabbed my Bhagavad Gita and a couple of clothes, and off we went to West Australia. I actually read Bhagavad Gita all the way. I actually had quite a mystical experience on the way. I was about halfway across the Nullarbor, and I was reading the Bhagavad Gita for hours and hours, and then I got tired, so I sort of hopped into the back seat and I lay down. And when I lay down, I started to dream that I was in the front seat again, looking at the car in front of me, because I didn't realise I was dreaming. I thought I was just there. I thought I must have woken up and I was sitting there looking again. And when I was looking, I saw that in front of me was a car full of young people, about my age, teenagers. And they were all partying, drinking, smoking. The guys had all their arms around the girls, and there was like a whole bunch of them in there. And and then I looked, and there was another person who was sort of in the car, but not quite in it. It was like a transposed in the car. He was sort of there, but not in there. There was this yogi. And he had this, side on. He had this beautiful, his complexion, like olive golden complexion, and long straight hair, no top on. And he was sitting just, sideways. And then, I thought, I wonder if he'll look at me. And as I said that, he slowly turned around and looked at me. And when he looked at me, his just eyes just pierced me, and I just went like this, I just felt like just something just pierced my heart like that. And then he turned back sideways, and then he yawned. But it was a yawn like they describe in the Nectar Devotion, that yawning is a symptom of the ecstatic love of God. And when he yawned, it was like he was saying to me, everything in this material existence means nothing. It was a yawn like that. This whole material existence is nothing to me. And you could see that he was in this bliss. And he turned around again. He looked at me, and again, just pierced my eyes. And then I saw these swans flying past. And then I woke up. It was quite So I thought, gee, this Bhagavad Gita, it's got some potency. I felt this great sage had visited me. So anyway, after reading the Bhagavad Gita, I never actually put together the devotees. I hadn't really had anything much to do with them. That they were... I didn't realise it was a Hare Krishna movement. The Bhagavad Gita kept saying associate with devotees. I didn't know that there was such a thing, And but I thought, gee, wouldn't it be nice if I could associate with devotees? Mm-hmm. And therefore, when I actually met the devotees, and one of the devotees said to me, "Why don't you come back to the temple?" I just immediately went back to the temple. So, you know, just the because Srila Prabhupada, being most confidential servant of Krishna, when he presented Bhagavad Gita, it was just powerful. It could, you know, his Bhagavad Gita, his books can make devotees, you know, just have such an impact on people's lives because Krishna is present. That is the potency of the devotee. Therefore, we worship the spiritual master, the devotee of the Lord, as non-different from Krishna, because they are the most confidential servitor that they can literally give you Krishna. The Krishna is present there in the association of the devotees. So we should always remember that. Therefore, we have to be very appreciative of the opportunity to associate with devotees. There are many others who, you know, they give Bhagavad Gita or even Srimad Bhagavatam, and they give some impersonal, all of them, nearly all of them, give some impersonal rendition of the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, even in this verse here, there's an interesting point. In this verse 53, where it says, Gyat Vatmanam ad Hoksajam. Now, Sridhar Swami says that the words there also indicate that the gopis recognize Lord Krishna to be the very soul of their lives and thus spiritually one with them. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he describes that particular passage there is meant to bewilder the atheists, the impersonalists, those who read Srimad Bhagavatam and who want to find some, you know, give it some impersonal conception. This very verse, that very statement is there for them. He describes it's like the Mohini incarnation. The Mohini incarnation, she is Krishna himself, but she appeared in such a way as to bewilder the mind of the atheist in order to, you know, keep them away, deprive them, really, of this nectar of immortality. See? So this verse is like this, like this Mohini incarnation, which is depriving the atheists of this nectar of immortality of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because they will read that and they will say, there is conclusive truth. Here, even the gopis are seeing Krishna as non-different, that they are one with Krishna, they are worshipping Uddhava as non-different from the Lord. And in this way, they actually will comment on Srimad Bhagavatam in such an impersonalist way. But of course, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that there was, you know, the only reason that the gopis were even tasted this Brahmagyan, or this sort of sense of oneness with the Lord, is just so that they could display to us their distaste for it. And therefore, this was manifest later on, as he describes in the 65th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Balaram went to Vrindavan, then the gopis expressed many different moods of jealous, you know, love, similar to what they expressed in this chapter. So, you know, had they, Uddhava come with this message and they become, yes, we are one with Krishna, then that would have been their mood for the rest of the Bhagavatam. But we don't see that. We see that their mood actually is always this mood of so many ecstatic sentiments of love between the lover and the beloved. There is no question of monism. Similarly, in the 28th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna showed the Brajavasis, remember he took them to the Akrura Ghat And he revealed to them the Brahma Jyoti, and then he revealed to them the spiritual planets. So he did that, Krishna did that. First he revealed to them the Brahma Gyan, and then he revealed to them the spiritual planets, their final destination, in order to show the, you know, comparison that, you know, you would naturally get a distaste. You know, seeing the wonderful opulence of the spiritual world, you know, even though you've seen Brahman and the opportunity to merge into Brahman, you would have no taste for it. So the gopi simile is described that they were also dipped into this Brahma-gyan realization just so that they could manifest to us this distaste for Brahma-gyan and their great love for Krishna Prema, Prema Bhakti. Therefore, Srila Vishvanatha Chakrabarti Thakur, again quoting Srila Sridhar Swami, says that Sridhar Swami, he quotes that for a devotee, the four pillars of the four goals of life, you know, mundane religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and personal liberation, he describes that actually these are no more significant to a devotee who's immersed in prema bhakti than a blade of grass. So this is the actual position of the devotees. Just as we, you know, walk, we go for a walk, no one stops. Oh, look at that blade of grass. Oh, look at that one. You know, you just walk past, it doesn't, you know, never really figures in your consciousness. It's, you know, beautiful to look at, but, you know, if you're heading to some destination, you don't stop, you know, oh, look at this blade of grass. And there's another one, you know, I'm going to spend my life here, right next to this blade of grass. No, and I will come and visit it every day and worship this blade of grass. You know, for a devotee, all these four goals which everyone else is seeking madly, of course in Kali Yuga people are really just after sense gratification. They don't care about the others. Religiosity is, you know, religiosity is a means for sense gratification and economic development. And, you know, people don't really believe in liberation so much. They're really just after sense gratification. But the devotees, they do not care a fig for any of these things. They are immersed in Prema Bhakti. So, this is the... But only a devotee can give that message. Only Krishna's confidential servitor can teach us that Krishna is a person, and there is love of God. That is the highest goal of life, not in personal liberation, not going to the heavenly planets, what to speak of, you know, trying to enjoy, you know, on this earthly planet. And in this way, the devotee of the Lord, most confidential servant of the Lord, he can deliver Krishna, he can give you a picture of the spiritual world, and that is so powerful that therefore they are able to, the potency of Krishna being present, of getting a glimpse of the spiritual world, is able to make devotees all over the world. And that is why we worship the pure devotees of the Lord. We don't worship the pure devotees of the Lord simply because, you know, for their, that they want to somehow profit materially or in any way, that they are, you know, devotees are thinking, you know, you'll worship me, give me your money, I will become wealthy and famous. That is not the purpose. We worship the pure devotees of the Lord because they can actually give you God. So I'll just leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments.
Yes, thank you. You're talking about the spiritual master being representative of Paramatma. Yesterday, when I was in Paris, it was just like I was looking at Kadama Kanda Maharaj, and I was like almost seeing that he was definitely that manifestation. Like that. It was really, really strange because it never really happened before. But I was kind of. Kind of shocking, but not shocking, but I've seen so many people come through, but it's just like yesterday, it was really, really
the representative of the Paramatma. Yeah. Mm. It's a fact. That's the vision of the devotee. They see that there is the Paramatma and there is devotee, his representative. They see both, and they never make the mistake of seeing them as one, the same. Mm. Jai, all glory to Prabhupada.
Thank you.